is around the area of Jerusalem on a bus and at the sites.
Now we're turning eastward. We're going to come to ancient Geba. Now, Geba, it's mentioned several times in the Old Testament, and its most important letter. In the early days, once the land was conquered by Moses, Joshua, as a matter of fact, in the time of the Exodus, and then going on to the time of David, when he was able to, Saul united the whole 12 tribes of Israel, and then finally David ruled in a powerful way. And certainly in Solomon's time, he was able, for those 40 years, to rule practically the world, because he had not only the central area here for his rule, but he controlled the economic, the social, even the religious affairs on earth at that time. So 40 years, it was almost like a millennium under the time of King Solomon. But Israel at that time, when it was completely united, it was known as existing from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south. Now remember, we were at Dan up there where the River Jordan started, and we've been to Beersheba yesterday. So Dan to Beersheba represents Israel. However, when when Sennacherib and then Sargon II, the Assyrians came and took northern Israel captive up to Babylon and beyond, then the northern area of Israel became half Gentile, with Samaritans being brought down, from Babylon to exist there. And then Israel, after the time of Hezekiah and Isaiah, after the last part of the 8th century BC, then Israel was not known as being from Dan to Beersheba, but from Geba to Beersheba. Okay? And Geba is right up here. So you can see that whole northern territory there was known as the northern 10 tribes of Israel. In fact, you see the canyon that's right ahead of us here. We're going to go parallel to it for a short distance. That today is called the Wadi El Sunuwet. Now, that was a major road in ancient times from the Jerusalem area down to Jericho. And if you go on the other side of the plateau, going westward, it's the Beth Horon Pass, mentioned several times in the scripture, leading down to the Mediterranean. And north of this canyon that you see down there was Israel, ancient Israel, or the 10 tribes. South of it was Judah. So after the northern 10 tribes were taken captive by the Assyrians in the middle part of the 8th century B.C., Israel was reduced in size, or Judah was, from Geba here, right up here on the hill. See that hill right in front of us there? That is Geba. We're going to get out of the bus and walk a little bit on the other side, because we got an interesting story to tell you about what happened at Geba. Now, so it was from Geba to Beersheba in the south that represented the land of Judea, from the time of Isaiah down to the time of Jeremiah, about 125 years. And then the Jews were taken captive, remember, in 586 B.C., and there was nothing left of Israel in this territory except some bare remnants here and there. They were in Babylon for 70 years and had to come back under Joshua and Zerubbabel and Ezra and Nehemiah. You'll remember that, but that's afterward. Then they settled in this area of Judea here. But from Geba to Beersheba. Now we've been to both places now, and you'll see the area of Judea. Another interesting thing about this Geba, mentioned in the 14th chapter of the book of Zechariah. At the time it says the Mount of Olives is going to split in two, there at the beginning of chapter 14, it says some major geological changes are going to be taking place in this area. If you'll read that chapter carefully, and you ought to, in fact, I'm almost halfway tempted just to stop and read it, because it's most important, but just let me give you the highlights of it. it says that when that mountain of Olivet is split in two, one other thing happens. It says Jerusalem shall be lifted up. It means a mountain is going to come forth. You talk about seismic disturbances. Not only is one mountain going to be cleaved in half, another mountain is going to be raised up. That's at Jerusalem. That's exactly what it says in Zechariah 14. Now, not only that, it says, now listen to this. It says from Geba, north of Jerusalem, right here, not on the other side of the mountain, or the canyon, but from right here, it even mentions Geba, this little village. From Geba, south to Rimon. Rimon is down near Arad, where we were yesterday for lunch, 40 miles south of Jerusalem. That whole area here is going to be turned into a level plain. Read it, Zechariah 14. Now, most people don't even realize what that means, but that's the fact. All of this is going to be made into a level plain. Now, it's certainly not level now, is it? There's Gibeah down there, which is a mountain ridge. There is Nabi Samuel, which is a mountain. There is Jerusalem itself. There is Hebron, which are mountains. It's going to be made a level plain. Let's see if we can go. It's paved up there, but I think we ought to stop here. Let's stop right here, and we will come back to the coach, Muhammad, okay? We're going to walk up there and then come back. You're going to find this an interesting story, at least I do, because something happened here in the area just in front of us, which was most important to the history of ancient Israel. And it's right here recorded in 1 Samuel chapters 13 and 14. Let me give you a little synopsis of it first. What happened in front of us here was a major battle. In fact, it was called in the Bible the Day of Battles. So some great battle took place. It happened on one day, and it happened in the foreground right in front of us. It also had to do with this Geba that we have right here that we're standing on the northern side of. And it was a most important battle because what occurred here, it was something like in British history or English history, we'd say the Battle of Hastings, you know, 1066. Or what battle in America would we say? Or the Civil War, the major one, you know what I mean, that changed the whole course of history for various people. Well, the same thing happened here. This is where Jonathan and his armor bearer went up to defeat the Philistines, two men, you know. And as a result of that, a war took place on that one day between Saul and his forces, with Jonathan, and the Philistines. And the Philistines had been up in this area before, and they had cut, in effect, Israel in two, Judah in the south and the northern tribes up north. And what happened here was a major, major victory for Israel, and God was in it. And there's no question God was in it, because he did something on that day that the Israelites never forgot. In fact, it was called the Day of Battle. It's actually stated that way in 1 Samuel 13 and 14 here. This battle was so important that as a result of it, and causing the Philistines to be sent back to the plains area down near the Mediterranean where we were yesterday, that's why I wanted to go there first so you could see that, before coming up here to this area here. They went down there, and the Israelites never had any major trouble with the Philistines after that. None. Before that time, they had all different types of troubles, you know, with Samson and this and that and various servitudes and so forth. But not after what happened here on the Day of Battle. Now, this Day of Battle here is mentioned in as I said, 1 Samuel chapter 13. And in verse 22, so it came to pass in the day of battle. Now, I'm going to mention what that battle was in just a moment. But you know, this battle here was so significant that, and it took place in the 11th century B.C., but so significant in uniting the nation of Israel into one under King Saul, and then later on under David, and then Solomon, and so forth. So important that the later prophets remembered it for years and years. In fact, in Zechariah that I was telling you about as we were approaching Geba, where it says in the 14th chapter that Geba, let me read that. I think that's important right here. Just very quickly read that over in Zechariah because these events have not occurred in history. They are just on the horizon in front of us. And if we believe the Bible, you're going to be reading almost contemporary history when you read that 14th chapter of the book of Zechariah. It says in verse 1, "Behold, the day of the Lord comes, the spoil shall be divided in the midst of you. I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half the city shall go forth into captivity, and the rest of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations." Now this is at the end time. "Fight against those nations," now listen to this, "as when he fought in the day of battle." In the day of battle. You know what we have a tendency to do? I'm talking about Ernest Martin too. We pass right over that, then go right on to the next verse. "But as he protected Israel in the day of battle, so in the future, not long ahead of us, he's going to duplicate what he did in the day of battle at this time of the end." You know what the next verse says? "He is going to fight against those," I'm repeating, "fight against those nations at the end of the age to come against Jerusalem, as when he fought in the day of battle. Now, and his feet shall stand that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east, toward the west. There shall be a very great valley, and half the mountain shall be removed toward the north, and half of it toward the south." Now, are we not having described here a great seismic disturbance? Our little 6.1 earthquake we had in Los Angeles that shook us all over the place is nothing compared to what's going to happen when that Mountain of Olives splits in two. But you know that's not the only thing that's going to happen. Just read right on. It goes on to say in verse 9, "And the Lord shall be king over all the earth in that day. In that day there shall be one Lord, and his name one." Now listen to this, verse 10. "And the land shall be turned as a plain," a level plain, no mountains. Well, maybe little rolling hills, but no mountains. "From Geba," right here, "to Rimon, south of Jerusalem." There were two Rimons, and he had to point out which one he meant. 40 miles south of Jerusalem. From right here, 40 miles south of Jerusalem, it's going to be a level plain. That's what it says. You have to even almost be here and see the geography to understand what's talked about. Just imagine here you are in Madison, Wisconsin, reading all about this, and you believe the Bible. Of course you read it and you understand. You can look it up on a map, but you don't get the feeling of what it means, you see. All right, from this place right here until Rimon, almost to Arad, not quite, where we ate lunch yesterday, is going to be turned into a level plain. Now, you either believe it or not. I believe it. Now it goes on. That's not the end of it, though. "From Geba to Rimon, south of Jerusalem, and it," that's Jerusalem, "shall be lifted up and inhabited in her place." It's going to be lifted up to be a mountain, higher than all the other. Can you imagine a level plain from here down to Rimon, and then the Mount of Olives cut in two, but Jerusalem's going to be lifted up? You talk about seismic disturbances again, I repeat. That's what's going to happen. You are now standing at the very spot where God picked to be Geba, to where it's going to be a level plain from now on, south. Not over here, but south of us here. Now, Zechariah says he is going to fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle. All right, now Zechariah must have known what the day of battle was. Now, do we know what the day of battle was? Yes, we do, and we're certainly going to see it right now. Let's see what happened up here on the day of battle. Samuel. Let me get to it here. This takes just a little while to read, not long, but when we get the story, just imagine maybe a panoramic of, well, you got a panoramic view of where all of this happened, and maybe we can put it in cinemascope, okay? Because you got Technicolor out there already. All right, here's what it says. Chapter 13. "Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel for his army, whereof 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan, his son, in Gibeah of Benjamin, and the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent." That's verse 2. Now look at what we have in this verse here. He says Saul, King Saul at the time, chose 3,000 men and placed them in Michmash. That's what it says. Whereas Jonathan took 1,000 men and placed them in Gibeah. I told you where Gibeah was, about 2 miles south of here. That's where the 1,000 men were. You know where the 2,000 men of Saul were? Right over there. See that village on a hill? To this very day in Arabic, you know what the name of that is? Michmash. This very day. That's it. There's not a slightest doubt in the world. That is Michmash over there. So we had 1,000 men then of Saul under Jonathan, his son, back at Gibeah, and 2,000 over here. And what happened to all the other army, our members of the army that Saul had? It says, and the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent, back to rest, to go on back to their homes, you know, wherever. All right, now, that is the situation. So there weren't many people here, not many in the army. 2,000 of Israel there, 1,000 back up here at Gibeah. Now what happens? And Jonathan, with those 1,000 men, he smote the garrison of the Philistines that was at Geba, right up here. The Philistines had come over and occupied Geba. They occupied some of the areas over here in Mount Bethel. This is Mount Bethel here. But they had occupied Geba, and that did not belong to the Israelites. The Philistines had come up from the coast, and they occupied this fort city. What they were effectively trying to do was to cut Israel in two, you see? Israel in the north, Judah in the south. And by that, controlling this trade route here and the pass area up here, they could effectively control the country. This Wadi El Sunawet that you see down here, which is a canyon, it leads down to Jericho. And in ancient times, it was the main road from Jericho up to the plateau into Jerusalem. And if you go on westward, you go down the Beth Horon Pass, which was the main road, even in British times it was. Main road down into the plains of the Philistines, or Sharon. By the way, when you look right over here, see those telephone, or that pole there? If you would keep on going this way toward that mountain area there, you would think from this vantage point you could walk all the way. Well, you can't, because there is a canyon down there. And I'll tell you this, if you walked over there, it would take you probably about 30 minutes to do it, which we do not have time to do. All of a sudden, you'd find you couldn't get very far. You know what you're going to find in front of you? A miniature Grand Canyon with steep cliffs on one side, steep cliffs on another, about 300 feet high, a 30-story building. You can't. It's hard to get down them, but you can't see it from here, you know. All right, now keep that in mind. This was a major trade route here, and the Philistines had come up into this area. They had taken Geba right up here on the hill, but Jonathan, he had 1,000 men with him. So what he did was he came up, it says, and smote the garrison of the Philistines that was at Geba. And the Philistines heard of it, that is, the ones down in the plains area. And Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. We've made a major victory. You know, he was over there at Michmash. His son had just taken over Geba. So now they were routing the Philistines. See the point? There's only one problem. The Philistines down in the plains heard about it. All right. And all Israel heard say that Saul had smitten the garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel also had in abomination with the Philistines. And the people were gathered together after Saul to Gilgal. After this major victory by Jonathan of taking over Geba, then Saul took the 1,000 that Jonathan had, his men, his 2,000, and they went down this pass to Gilgal. What it says. Gilgal was located just east of Jericho. Now he wanted to go down there to rally Israel to come together in an armed force. Now that we've conquered this area of the Philistines, come on, let's get together, boys, you know, and let's now rout the Philistines out of every area. The only trouble is the Philistines also had heard about this. So, and the Philistines, though, here's what happens. Now get this. Verse 5. The Philistines gathered themselves together with Israel, 30,000 chariots, it says, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude, which is a figure of speech, meaning a great multitude. And what did they do? And they came up, it says, and pitched in Michmash eastward from Bethaven. Right over here in this little draw is where Bethaven is. Here is Michmash. Now remember, Saul had abandoned Michmash and went down to Gilgal. He was trying to get all the Israelites to come together down there. Well, here come the Philistines. And the Philistines come with quite a mighty force, don't they? It says 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen. 30,000 chariots. I want you to look at the country up here, and a little bit later on, over there when we get close to it, which we will be, and you will find, some scholars have said, critics, well, what in the world, they want chariots up here? I mean, they couldn't run them much, you know, they're not of value. They didn't bring the chariots up here to fight up here. Where was Saul? They knew where he was. He was down in the plains area. They were getting ready to take those chariots and the 6,000 men to swoop down on Saul. You see, that's what they were trying to do. All right. When the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, and indeed they were with that type of force, for the people were distressed, then the people did hide themselves in caves and in thickets and in rocks and in high places and in pits all over this area here. They began to hide themselves in this vast army that had been brought up from the Mediterranean. Some of the Hebrews, they went over Jordan. I mean, they hightailed it on the other side. They didn't want to fight with the Philistines. They went to the land of Gad, to Gilead. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal. He stayed down there. And all the people following him trembled. They were afraid because Saul only had 3,000 men. And here was this mighty force ready to swoop down on them. And he tarried 7 days down there in Gilgal, according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. Now, you have to read a little earlier on that Samuel said, now you wait for me until I get down there, and then we'll offer a sacrifice to God. Now, Samuel was a priest. He was the one that anointed David, remember. Samuel of the prophet, not my Samuel. Samuel who's prophet, you know. Well, Samuel was the one in charge as far as God was concerned. So 7 days he tarried according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him. They were beginning to leave. You know, they said, we're not going to petition God. Well, my goodness, what's going to happen? These Philistines are going to take us over. And Saul said, finally, because Samuel didn't show up, bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered a burnt offering down there in Gilgal. Well, the only trouble is, only priests could offer an offering. No ordinary person could at that time. But Saul did it. Well, what happened? And it came to pass, verse 10, that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. I think Samuel was testing him out, to be quite honest with you. He just waited until the last minute. But Saul saw that all his men were leaving him, and people were hiding in the thickets up here, and they were going scattering everywhere. What did he have to do? He said, they were saying, we're not going to stick with you unless you offer an offering to God. And so he did it. And behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, because I saw the people were scattering from me, and that you didn't come, you know, within the days appointed, and the Philistines are gathered at me at Michmash. Therefore, said I, the Philistines will come down upon me to Gilgal, swoop down on me. And I have not made supplication unto the Lord, unto Yahweh. I forced myself therefore and offered a burnt offering. He did it on his own. And he shouldn't have done it. Here he is petitioning the Lord. And he doesn't wait for the Lord's prophet. Maybe there's a lesson in that for all of us. Samuel said to Saul, you have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now would the Lord have established your kingdom upon Israel forever, or for the ages. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought after him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because you have not kept that which the Lord commanded you. Now just imagine, Saul felt he was in a strait. He didn't mean bad, you know. The people were departing from him, so what you going to do? He said, the only thing Samuel hadn't showed up yet. Maybe he stumbled or something. Maybe he's sick. So he offered the burnt offering himself. The only thing is he didn't have authority to do it. And Samuel arose, got up from Gilgal, and went to Gibeah of Benjamin. They came back up to Gibeah, back up there where King Hussein's castle was being built. And Saul numbered the people that were present with him, 600 men. That's all that was left. Of all of them, all they just scattered. Some of them hidden over here, you know, in the rocks and thickets. That's all he had. And he was afraid. 16, verse 16. And Saul and Jonathan, his son, and the people that were present with them, abode in Gibeah of Benjamin. They came back up here. They abode in Gibeah. But the Philistines encamped in Michmash, right over there. And I mean they had 30,000 chariots. They had 6,000 armed men for the war. And that's where they were. 36,000. Well, how many for chariots? Maybe there are two or three for chariots. Anyway, verse 17. Now that they were established, the Philistines, it says, and the spoilers, in the original it means raiders, came out of the camp of the Philistines in three companies. One company turned unto the way that leads to Ophrah, unto the land of Shual. I'll point that out in a minute. That is Ophrah. It has a kind of a modern significance to it because a man by the name of Sirhan, you know, who killed President Kennedy? Robert Kennedy, sorry. Robert Kennedy, that is where his father lived about 5 years ago, and I think he still lives there now. So I don't know if you'd call that modern history or not. But the little Arab village over there, and that is Ophrah of Ephraim. By the way, it's also mentioned in the Gospel of John that when Christ came down here, not long before he went to Bethany to raise Lazarus from the dead, and then to Jerusalem to be killed, that he dwelt in Ophrah, right over there. So that's another thing. All right, now here are the Philistines camped here, and they send one group of raiders toward Ophrah. They send the other toward Beth-Horon, back up the Beth-Horon Pass here. And the other, it says, the third, went by the way of the border that looks to the valley of Zeboam toward the wilderness. The wilderness area is this way, and Zeboam is that way. You know, it's interesting, this word Zeboam. I hesitate to just keep, I almost want to stop and explain about every one of these geographical terms because they're so important. Zeboam was one of the cities of the plains that was a part of Sodom and Gomorrah. Remember Sodom, Gomorrah, Adma, Zeboam, and Zoar, the five, okay? Zeboam, the wilderness of Zeboam, is directly toward the east of here. Keep that in mind, on the northern edge of the Dead Sea. You remember yesterday how John was saying the old tradition, going back to Josephus' time, that Sodom and Gomorrah were at the southern end of the Dead Sea, and they even have Sodom down there? Don't believe it. The northern end of the Dead Sea, the wilderness of Zeboam, one of those towns, is directly east of here, and Jericho is in Zeboam. In fact, Jericho could have been even called Zeboam before it was called Jericho, you see, the city of the palm trees. Because before Jericho became Jericho, the whole area was watered like the Garden of God, like the Garden of Eden. There wouldn't have needed any, in that earlier days, wouldn't have needed any oasis, you see. The wilderness of Zeboam is directly east of here. And let me tell you this, the five cities that were destroyed were in the northern part of the Dead Sea, and in north of that. Zeboam is directly east of here. So, a raider part, another, went east towards Zeboam, the wilderness of Zeboam. All right, now we got that in mind. Now what happens? Well, it says this, verse 19. Now there was no smith. Now it didn't say Jones, it said no smith. And found throughout the whole land of Israel. And maybe I better put the word black in front of that. There was no blacksmith. That's what it means. Throughout all the land of Israel. For the Philistines said, lest the Hebrews make them swords or spears. But all the Israelites went down to the Philistines, went down to the Mediterranean area, to sharpen every man his share, his coulter, which means a plowshare, his axe and his mattock. Yet they had a file for mattocks, and for the plowshares and for the forks and for the axes to sharpen their goats. They had some files. That's all they had. They didn't have much metal, you know, up in here. The Philistines had it. Verse 22. Now we come to this famous verse, and pay attention to it. So it came to pass in the day of battle, okay, that we're going to talk about in a minute, the day of battle, that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people that were with Saul and Jonathan, but with Saul and with Jonathan his son there was found. Only two people had armament, the king and his son. So he had 600 men with him left, but they didn't have any armaments. They had sticks and stones and things like that, and slings, I guess. No armaments, only Saul and only Jonathan. And the Philistines were just armed to the hilt over there. Just armed to the hilt. Verse 23, and the garrison of the Philistines went out to the passage of Michmash. Now they began to move. Those three raiders going out was to clear the land, they thought, of any Israelites that might be here. However, some of them had hidden in caves and things like that, and they didn't get them. Now that they had done that, they were going to start to move. The garrison of the Philistines, all 6,000 of them, plus the 30,000 chariots that they had brought, not for war up here, but for war down in the plains area down there. Now it says they started to move, went out to the passage of Michmash. I want you to pay attention to this word passage. Passage of Michmash. We're going to be in that passage, and it's mentioned in the book of Isaiah concerning a prophecy about an Assyrian coming with his army down here near the end time. They're going to stop also in that same passage. Same one. You're going to be there in a few minutes. The passage of Michmash here, there's Michmash, means this area of the canyon down there where people could come across one way or the other. And this was the main road down to Jericho and Gilgal. So what they were attempting to do now, in verse 23, is they've got their armed forces ready, and they were going to swoop down upon Gilgal and cut the nation effectively in two, and from there on move northward and southward and conquer the whole area, and that would have been the end of the Israelites. All of them would be put under servitude. Well, now, though, there's chapter 14. You know, something else happened. Now it came to pass upon a day that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said unto the young man that bare his armor, they had an armor bearer with him, come and let us go over to the Philistine garrison. Now this is just before they started to move. And it is on the other side, but he didn't tell his father. Now notice, they must have been standing somewhere in this area we are right now. Said, let's go over to the other side there, to Michmash. Now, what happens? He didn't tell his father Saul. Saul was back there in Gibeah. In fact, it's what it says here in verse 2. And Saul tarried in the uttermost part of Gibeah, back up there where King Hussein's castle was, under a pomegranate tree, which is in Migron. And the people that were with him were about 600 men. Then it goes on to say, and Ahiah, the son of Ahitub, the Ichabod's brother of the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, who was the Lord's priest in Shiloh, he was wearing the ephod. It means that this high priest was with Saul up there. And you know, they carried the Ark of the Covenant with them too when they tried to war or something. Well, the high priest was up there with Saul. He wasn't with Jonathan. And the people knew not that Jonathan was gone with his armor bearer. They didn't know it. Now, verse 4. And between the passages by which Jonathan sought to go over to the Philistine garrison, there was a sharp rock on the one side, and a sharp rock on the other side. And the name of the one was Bozes, and the name of the other was Sene. You walk right over there, and you'll see that Grand Canyon, and the rocks that are there, and to this very day, you can see Bozes and Sene. Just go down there and see them. They're right there, and I'll show you from a distance both of them. Sene means like a sharp tooth, you know, sheer walls without difficulty in climbing, you know? Okay. The forefront of the one was situate northward over against Michmash over there, and the other southward over against, it says Gibeah, but in the original it means Geba, here, on this side. Now Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, come, let us go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, if there is no restraint to the Lord, for there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. Two men against 6,000 armed troops and 30,000 chariots? Well, that's what they were doing. And he was the only one that had any armor, plus Saul back up in Gibeah with the high priest up there. And it says, and his armor bearer said unto him, do all that is in your heart. Turn you, let's go. Behold, I am with you according to your heart. Then said Jonathan, behold, we will pass over to these men, and we will discover ourselves unto them. They climb up, you know, those rocks, down and climb up. Now, if they say, tarry until we come to you, then we will stand still in our place and will not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, and we will go, then we will go up. For the Lord hath delivered them into our hands, and this shall be a sign to us, you know, that God's with us, one way or the other. And both of them, they went down in there and climbed up, and they discovered themselves under the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, behold, the Hebrews come forth out of the holes where they hid themselves. Remember it said in chapter 13 that they hid themselves in the thickets and the pits and the holes and the caves around? And they thought not just two people were coming up, they thought a whole host were coming up. That's what they thought. And the men of the garrison answered Jonathan and his armor-bearer and said, come up unto us, and we will show you a thing. Come on up here, we'll show it. You know, let's get going. Well, that was the sign. And so Jonathan said unto his armor-bearer, come up after me, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hand of Israel. My goodness, they were two brave men, weren't they? Two of them, that's all. And only one of them had armor. And Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and upon his feet. And let me tell you, to get that sinne over there, you have to climb up on your hands and feet. I have never done it, but some of the college kids did. I told them where it was down there, and it was a great experience. And when you get right up on top of sinne, you know, where the Philistines were, it's most interesting because the exact description that you find here in the Bible is right there to this very day. Notice what happens. And the first slaughter... And Jonathan climbed up his hands and upon his feet, and his armor-bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan, and the armor-bearer slew after him. And the first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor-bearer made was about 20 men. Now here's the thing. Within, as it were, a half acre of land which a yoke of oxen might plow. That's a strange way of putting it, but that was it. You know, about an acre of land. You climb up sinne, and you know what's right up there on top? Just a level little area right there. About an acre of land. Right there. And here, though, is something. Because in verse 15, they had just killed 20 men of the Philistines. And by that time, a report had been given, you know, we're being invaded from these people coming out of the pits and so forth and so on. Now, you would have said, well, what kind of a day of battle is this? I mean, you know, only 20 men being killed, and they got 6,000 others, plus the 30,000 chariots and all the people associated with them. So that wasn't much of a big deal, you'd think. However, here's where God comes on the scene. And remember what Zechariah said, that at the end of the age, when the Mount of Olives splits in two, and when the nations come around Jerusalem, it's going to be like in the day of battle like this, and a lot of seismic disturbances has to take place at that time. All right, listen to verse 15. Most people just pass right over this, but this is the key to the whole thing. As soon as those 20 men were killed, those Philistines, it says in verse 15, and there was trembling in the host, in the army, in the field, and among all the people, the garrison and the spoilers that had gone in this direction here, the raiders, and they also trembled, it says, and the earth quaked. There's the key. A gigantic earthquake occurred at that very time. Now imagine, they were thinking not two men would dare come up against the Philistine host. That was ridiculous. So a lot of Israelites, they thought, were coming up, you know. And at the same time, a gigantic earthquake hit this country. And as a result of that, look at the consternation that would have taken place amongst the Philistines there. Well, that's what happened. It says, the earth quaked, so it was a very great trembling. Just not an ordinary earthquake like a 6.1 that we had. I mean, it was a devastating one. And it just, everything was in consternation. So you see, the Lord was coming to help Israel. And the watchmen of Saul in Gibeah of Benjamin, they felt the earthquake too. And they rushed over and they looked, and behold, the multitude, the many, melted away. And they went on beating down one another. Now the Philistines started to fight one another. This is easy to see. Some of the officers were saying, stand still. They said, we're not standing still here, you know. We're going to be conquered. And they started fighting against one another. The Philistines did. And it says, and Saul said unto the people that were with him, number now and see who is gone from us. And when they had numbered, behold, Jonathan and his armor bearer were not there. The only ones left that weren't there. And Saul said unto Ahijah, who was the high priest, bring hither the ark of God. For the ark of God, which was where the Ten Commandments were, the rod of Aaron, the pot of manna, you know, all that, which represented the presence of God. And when they would battle in those days, they'd put God or Yahweh in the forefront of the army, you see. So Saul says to Ahijah, bring hither the ark of God, for the ark of God was at that time with the children of Israel. And it came to pass, while Saul talked unto the priest, that the noise that was of the host of the army of the Philistines went on and increased. I mean, they were really getting in consternation, fighting with one another. And Saul said unto the priest, withdraw your hand. For some reason, Ahijah just put his hand on that ark and said, this is not time yet. Don't go. And Saul said, well, look at them over there. They're just going, you know, all over. He said, this is the time to go. And the priest said, it's not time to go. He just held his hand. And Saul and all the people that were with them assembled themselves, and then the priest let the hand go away at a particular time. And they came to the battle, and behold, every man's sword was against his fellow down there, the Philistines. And there was a very great discomfiture. Moreover, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, that went with them into the camp, which went up with them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with Israelites who were with Saul and Jonathan. Likewise, all the men of Israel which had hid themselves in Mount Ephraim over here, in the caves, in the pits, and all of that, that great earthquake disturbed them too. They came up, and they saw what was happening, and they joined then in the battle. And the Philistines fled. Even they also followed hard after them in battle. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed unto Bethaven. It left Michmash here because those Philistines were getting out of here hightailed as fast as they could, going back toward Bethaven. And to make a long story short, you can read the rest of it. But what happened was this. The Philistines were routed by this gigantic earthquake that took place. They started killing themselves, and then the Israelites joined forces. They went to Bethaven up there near the plateau area. It goes on to say they chased them down into the Mediterranean, and that's the last time you ever hear of any major Philistine confrontation with the Israelites. But what happened also at this time was that Saul was so pleased, and the people were with him, that they said God must be working with Saul and with Solomon. Jonathan, his son. And from that time forward, it says that Israel then united together as a united nation for the first time since the time of Moses or Joshua. And from that time forward, Saul became powerful. And then later on, a few years later, David became king over all. And then Solomon, within two generations, they had now become the top nation on earth. In two generations, from nothing to top nation on earth. You might say, from two people, Saul and Jonathan, the only ones who had any armor at all, having nothing, to being rulers of the world within two generations. Most interesting. It all started right here. So this is like the Battle of Hastings, you see, 1066, or a major battle that you can think of that changed the whole course of history. Right here in front of us is where it took place. And this is where Israel became the United Nation under Saul. Okay? That is Bethel over there. That's Bethel. And when the nation was split in two in the time of Jeroboam, you know, after Solomon's death, the borderline between Judah in the south and Israel in the north was the passage of Michmash, what you're looking at right here. And it's Bethel down there where Jeroboam set up the calf to worship because he wanted to get as close to Jerusalem as he could, you know, so he could get people to come to that area there. But that is Bethel, and this is known as the Mountains of Bethel right in here. Okay, look over on your left. See the minaret right there? That is Anathoth. That is where Jeremiah the prophet was born. Right over there where the minaret is, about a mile south of here. That's Jeremiah's hometown, Anathoth. Now, keep that in mind because the prophecy I'm going to mention in Isaiah in just about 10 minutes has to do with that Anathoth as well. And it talks about Geba here. It talks about Ramah back there. It talks about Gibeah. Now, we're going to see before noontime, around noontime, Gibeon. All those are different. Geba, Gibeah, and Gibeon. They're all different. Now, here we are on this new road. Let's see what happens as we go down here. We are now 4.5 miles from the Mount of Olives, just directly north. And remember, this is all going to be turned into a level plain. It's what Zechariah says. We were standing right up there. See? Now we're going down into the passage of Michmash, as it's called in the Bible. And it's called that also in the book of Isaiah concerning a prophecy, a major prophecy of the end time that has not yet occurred. Notice the rocks. See the rocks here? Those chariots were not used for warfare up here. They were intending to take them down to the plains. See the point? Most important to realize that. Or else the whole story makes no sense. They were trying to cut Israel in two and then use those chariots to go northward to Galilee and southward to the Dead Sea and that area there. Now here we are on this road going toward Michmash. There is the, you see this wadi down here on our right? That is the passage of Michmash. That used to be the highway between Gilgal or Jericho and up to the plateau here, and then go 5 miles south to Jerusalem. See the point? All right, now this is a little tell right up here on our right, believe it or not. Now it's a natural hill, but there was some kind of an establishment up there, and we do not know what it is as far as the Bible is concerned. Now, well, it's not mentioned in the Bible. And there are quite a number of them throughout the area here. We're going to go through a little olive grove here. And we'll stop right up here, and you can see Bozes and Sinai. Sinai is on the north side. At least I hope we can. Muhammad, could you stop here just a moment? Okay, look over there. See the canyon? All right, the south side is Bozes, and on the north side, you find it the same way, it's Sinai. Okay. Now, they came from Geba, and then went down one side and came up to the other side. And down near the bottom, you remember, the sign was, if they say, come on up and we'll fight with you, we'll do it. And so they climbed up on their hands and feet. Now, you can't see Sinai from here too well because it's on the north side. But you can see Bozes. It's like a miniature Grand Canyon. Okay, now this is Michmash up here. This is off the beaten path. You know, of all my time of being down here, I have not known, well, there certainly some have come out, but I have not known one group that has come to that significant place that we just looked at right there. Not one. And yet that's where one of the, well, the most major of battles took place back at that time. Now I want to turn to Isaiah chapter 7. 7 to 12. That's one long prophecy about Emmanuel. Now you know who Emmanuel is, don't you? God with us. About a virgin shall conceive and give birth to a child.